in Parsha Shoftim, we have the mitzvah of Minoy Melech, to establish and to designate someone to serve as the executive. Melech is not necessarily a king, but the executive over the people. You know there are three bodies of power in the structure. The Sanhedrin plays the role of what we call the judiciary, as well as the legislative. It's the supreme legislative body, and it's the ultimate judiciary body. As well, you have the kahuna. That's the educational branch. Okay, so you've got the kahuna, you've got the Sanhedrin, and then you've got a third branch, we'll call it the executive branch, that's the melech. Now, there's a famous debate in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Amud Beis, between Rabbi Yehuda, on the one hand, who holds that Minoy Melech is a mitzvah, and Rabbi Nehorai, on the other hand, who holds no. I'm articulating right now what the Abravanel says. You know, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, the Abravanel, they all support the view of Rabbi Nehorai that it's not a mitzvah. That's why there's no imperative in Parsha Shoftim. Thou shalt appoint an executive, right? You know, Som Tasim Alechem. What? It's a very, very challenging language which is used. What does it say? And I apologize, I'm turning right to those psukim. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud, I'm sorry, Yud Dalet. Ki savo el ha'aretz, asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach, v'rishta v'yashavta ba. It's only after you've actually conquered the land, you've actually settled the land, the amarta, and you say, asima alai melech, I would like to put upon myself, meaning the nation says, we would like to establish a melech, an executive. K'chol ha-goyim asher sivosai, the way that the other nations around us have an executive. Then it goes into Pasuk Tezvav, Som tasim alecha melech, then you shall appoint over yourselves an executive. So what's the whole introduction? V'amarta, asim alai melech, k'chol ha-goyim asher sivosai. You see, according to Rabbi Nehorai, which again, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, the Abravanel, it's a tolerance. It's an allowance. The Abravanel uses the famous phrase that Dibra Torah keneged yetzer hara shel adam, meaning the Torah knows that people have this need to point to one individual, to one person. So what happens is the Torah allows, if the people are not on a state of perfection where they need an individual that they have to define as their leader, there's an allowance. And then there's all kinds of conditions. There's a series of checks and balances, not too many wives, not to amass too much wealth, not to amass too much in terms of military power for himself, only that which is necessary for the defense of the nation, has to have a second Sefer Torah, the Karabo Kol Yamav, all of those conditions. That's how they learn it. The Rambam happens to follow the position of Rabbi Yehuda. But here's where we're going to pick up what the Rav said when it came to his analysis of this mitzvah. Why does the Torah resist an absolute power structure? Why is delegating rulership to one man over his fellow men not desirable? And again, working within the position of Rabbi Nehorai. It is a well-known axiom that power tends to corrupt the one who wields it. The noblest, best-intentioned ruler, again, the noblest, best-intentioned ruler, is affected by the glory, the tribute and the power of his office. This may cause him to step over the boundary of legitimate authority and succumb to arbitrariness and tyranny. The human ego is likely to be distorted and intoxicated by a status which has no external limits. A ruler may develop an insatiable craving for mass acclaim and shape his policies to curry favor with the masses through pomp, wasteful symbolic expenditures, and expansionist strivings for even greater power. He becomes a slave to the lowest common denominator of mass tastes and vulgar instincts. While his authority is seemingly unlimited, he longs for the hosannas of the crowd, and he becomes subservient to their mercurial predilections. The balance of the noblest personality can be influenced by such conflicting tensions. When Shaul HaMelech was denounced by Shmuel HaNavi for transgressing Hashem's command, he offered the lame defense that he had to satisfy the people's lust for spoils and submit to their demands. In effect, he conceded he was a follower, not a ruler. This tension between an inflated ego derived from unlimited power and the cringing need for popular approval, it creates conditions which are not conducive to effective leadership. It is difficult for a human being not to succumb to such conflicting pressures. A second reason. Again, what was the question? Why does the Torah resist an absolute power structure? And why is delegating rulership to one man over his fellow man not at all desirable? A second reason for the Torah's reluctance to delegate absolute power is that it is difficult to formulate criteria for ideal leadership. Who should rule? Is the aggressive, brilliant personality superior to the humble, contrite individual? Accidents of birth and circumstance may elevate one person to a more privileged class, endowing him with a regal bearing and an extroverted personality, which evoke popular acclaim. Have not many incompetent leaders wreaked havoc throughout history despite their charismatic personalities? Who, therefore, is entitled to rule? Perhaps no man is ever entitled to rule over his fellow human being. Precisely because of these considerations, rulership is, after all, a divine attribute. Only Hashem can exercise it equitably without abuse. In our tefillos, we say, L'cha Hashem HaMelacha, right? Yours is the kingship, and you are exalted over everything. Although we believe that imitatio Dei v'alachta bidrachav, imitating God's ways is a basic Torah guide to morality, this does not apply in the realm of power, a prerogative which is solely the Ribono Sha'olam. We do say, just like Hashem is Rachum, so should we be Rachum, but never do we say, just like as He is mighty, so should we. Social and political reality makes it necessary to entrust power to a king or other ruler, even though the Torah would ideally prefer otherwise. Permission to anoint a king may be classified amongst the mitzvahs that the Chachamim described in these terms, that it's Dibra Torah keneged Yetzer Hara Shel Adam. The Abravanel relates the concession to appoint a king is similar to the whole notion of Eishes Shefas Toar, where a similar allowance is made for the weaknesses of human nature. Appointing a king was often a practical necessity to safeguard the community from dangers both internal and external. Rabbi Yehuda, who maintains that appointing a king is a mitzvah, it is an obligation, he holds, right, Shalosh Mitzvos Nitzdavu, there are three commandments that the Jewish people became obligatory upon, the Jewish people, as soon as they entered the land, Minoy Melech, to appoint a king, you know, to wipe out, you know, Hachras is Zaro Shel Amalek, to wipe out the descendants of Amalek, and Binyan Beis HaMikdash. The king was appointed to combat external enemies and to strengthen inner spiritual cohesion. Before the first king was anointed, anarchy prevailed, right? What does it say about the period of the Shoftim? Ish kol hayashar be'inav yaseh. Everyone did what he felt was right in his own mind. Ein melech b'Yisrael. There was no central authority, and therefore everyone, so to speak, beat to their own drummer. This condition, as well as Philistine incursions, motivated the people to demand a king. The Rambam explicitly states the role of a king in Hilchos Malachim, Perek Dalet Halacha Yud, and in all he does, his objective should be heavenly, l'shem shemayim, and his goal and thought to enhance the true faith and to fill the world with righteousness, to destroy the arm of wickedness, and to fight the milchamos Hashem, the wars of Hashem, for he was crowned specifically to administer justice and to lead in battle, as it says, let our king judge us and go out before us and fight our wars. That's from the beginning of Perek Ches and Shmuel. The Melucha was permitted, though not to create symbols of national glory or to forge empires. A king was expected to fulfill a particular telos, an objective, an assignment. Shaul was anointed to repulse the Pelishtim. David's goal was to unify the loosely federated tribes into a single nation and to complete the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, of the Holy Land. And Shlomo's mission was to build the Beis HaMikdash. Other kings were delegated to rid the country of Avodah Zarah. The point being what? That there's an allowance and a tolerance according to most of the Mefarshim who follow Rabbi Nahorai. But it's not ideal for one person to be lording himself over others. And the Rav gave the two reasons. Number one is, by definition, it just leads to, it facilitates neediness and policy based upon the whims and the fancies of the people. The man with the most power becomes the greatest slave, a slave to the approbation of the masses. And number two is, what makes someone in a position that they truly are worthy of lording themselves over another human being. And that again explains why there are so many checks and balances. The various mitzvos elaborated in our parsha, in the Sheni Aliyah, that keeps checks and balances on the executive of the Jewish people. Thank you.